Welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School. This podcast is for federal government attorneys navigating the complex intersection of acquisition and fiscal law and policy. I'm your host, Major Ellie Sewell.
I'm Major Jason Floyd.
And I am Major Ed Callahan. And Jason, we just grabbed you out of the hallway. We appreciate you taking some time to come in and talk to us. But we have prepared an update on the AI innovations and the AI contracting that we have going on. I mean, as recently as ripped out of the headlines this morning. While Ellie and I have been reading up on this a lot, we wanted to bring you in, get your perspective, and try and clarify some issues on maybe things that we have missed, things that you've come across in your experience, and just basically to bring you up to speed so you're going to be as smart as Ellie and I when you walk around the halls of this esteemed building.
If you guys don't know, Jason is our AI guy in the office. He loves using it. So when we ever have a question on how to use it, we go to him. So this will be good to see his take on some of these policy shifts and some of the new things that have been happening lately.
And what he can do without AI giving him all the answers. That's what I really want to check on this one.
Which I can do nothing. Thanks, Ellie. Thanks, Ed. Happy to be here. Yeah, I don't know anything about law and policy with respect to AI. I just know how to use it well. So this will be fun. Buckle up, right?
So today we're tackling the single biggest policy shift of the year, and perhaps the decade, the federal government's decision to go all in on artificial intelligence.
That's right. So this isn't just an incremental update, right? On 3 April 2025, the Office of Management and Budget dropped a pair of memoranda that completely rewrote the rulebook on how federal agencies use and acquire AI. This has been followed by a series of blockbuster acquisition deals that have turned heads across government and industry.
Ooh, do you mean the GSA's AI suite?
Yes. We're going to get into that. So, and predictably for our audience, those blockbuster deals that Jason just mentioned have been met with blockbuster bid protests, raising questions about competition, security, and the rule of law in federal procurement. So today, we'll break down the new policy framework, the acquisitions that followed, and the legal challenges that could define the future of AI in governments.
So where do we start?
Well, I think we get to start at the policy itself, right? Because if you don't start from there, then what are we talking about? The Trump administration has made it clear that it views AI as a key to maintaining America's global dominance. The new guidance, stemming from Executive Order 14179, fundamentally shifts the government posture of the prior administration's risk-averse approach to a forward-leaning, pro-innovation, and pro-competition mindset. Right, the core message to agencies is to stop imposing unnecessary bureaucratic restrictions and to start embracing AI to become more agile, cost-effective, and efficient.
So you're essentially saying that no holds are barred now, right?
So I think we've seen this like ourselves in the schoolhouse, even our AI positions have changed recently. They've started an AI working group. How can we implement it more and use it even within the schoolhouse?
Yeah, I know CGSC is continually refining their AI policies. And I think the general idea is let's learn how to use AI. Let's lean forward into this. And we're going to keep driving the competition and keep driving the industry within the military.
Exactly. So let's dig into the first of the two key documents, OMB's Memorandum M-25-21, titled Accelerating Federal Use of AI Through Innovation, Governance, and Public Trust. For government counsel, there are several critical takeaways. First, it redefines the role of the agency chief AI officer, or CAIO.
So just to take a quick break there, do you think we can come up with the first really good? Do we call him the chow? Like, do you think we can inject some sort of fun nickname?
Don't you speak Italian, Ed? Because your wife?
No, but that's also Italian. There's that.
Yeah. I think, do we call him the chow? I think we should call him the chow. C-A? Or
I think if we want to call him the chow, you lean into it.
All right, it's a chow. So we are officially saying the chief AI officer should be known as the chow.
And if the chow is listening, I didn't come up with that. Remember, that was Ellie Sewell.
I promise you, Ed, he's not listening. Or she.
Yeah, not with that attitude. And that's why you're the man off the street for this one, Jason.
Okay. They are no longer just compliance officers. The memo explicitly directs that they serve as change agents and AI advocates. Their job is to promote innovation, remove barriers, and advise on AI investments. So a huge part of their new role involves managing risk under a new framework. The memo does away with multiple confusing categories and introduces a single designation, high impact AI. This is a term that every agency attorney needs to have memorized. It's defined as AI whose output serves as a principal basis for decisions that have a legal, material, or significant effect on an individual's rights, safety, or access to critical services.
So that's a super broad definition. Are there like guiding documents as to what actually fits into that definition?
Yeah, so the appendix in the memo actually has a breakdown of some examples, right? So we're looking at use in healthcare if it's for patient diagnosis and treatment, use in law enforcement if it's for risk assessments or identifying criminal suspects themselves, screening for federal employment, and even, and for our purposes probably especially, using kinetic force in real-world circumstances. So when you think, even commonsensically, those would be the categories that we would say are a high-impact AI or a high-impact use of it, right? That's taking decision authority out of the terminal user, as in the doctor, as in the commander, as in the police officer on the ground.
And it makes sense. I mean, these are the times when, you know, human judgment, that's when we're supposed to be using it. They don't want to take that aspect away and just make everything numbers. So it kind of makes sense that those would be considered like high impact. And we're talking about people's safety, their lives, some kind of right that would be taken away criminally.
Okay, so I get the definition, high impact AI, but like what does that trigger? What does that do for us?
So based on the memo, it gives agencies a year to go through and do a set of minimum risk management practices. It's not immediately thrown on them and it's full. So they have time period to do some pre-deployment testing, create some risk mitigation plans. They should all complete a detailed AI impact assessment before deploying the system, right? They get independent internal reviews. They should conduct ongoing monitoring for performance issues and adverse impacts. And critically for due process here, agencies must ensure that individuals affected by AI-enabled decisions have access to timely human review and a chance to appeal. So your fate's not left entirely in the AI decision process.
Exactly. And again, it just goes back to that you still want that human judgment to come in. That's what makes us unique. And so we still want that in some of these decision processes.
So when I get non-select for promotion, like I can still appeal. Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah, it's definitely not because of this podcast.
It's also worth noting there's a waiver provision. Chow, the chief AI officer, can waive one or more of those requirements if they determine it would increase risk or impede a critical agency operation. But that waiver isn't a free pass. It must be documented, justified, tracked centrally, certified annually by the CHOW, and publicly reported. That's a high bar, and it creates a clear paper trail.
Okay, I think I get it. Is that the only piece of guidance we have so far that came out this year?
No, so that one obviously focuses on the use. That's what we've been talking about. But let's not forget that we are a contract and fiscal law podcast, right? So we got to talk about M2522, and that affects the buy policy. Right. So the stated goals there are to help agencies require the best-in-class AI quickly, competitively, and responsibly. It emphasizes fostering a competitive American AI marketplace, safeguarding taxpayer money, and promoting collaboration between acquisition, legal, IT, and program offices.
So for our listeners, in the acquisition world, M25-22 hits on some core legal and contractual issues. So it's directing agencies to maximize the use of AI products and services developed and produced in the United States. Very consistent with the Buy American policy, which many of us are familiar with. It also repeatedly warns against the danger of vendor lock-in. I know this is a big concern. So it's urging agencies to use contract terms that ensure data portability and interoperability. And I know that vendor lock-in was a big focus in the memo. We're really trying to avoid just getting stuck with one AI operator, that we can take that information that we put in it, but still have the ability down the road to change, to use it with other, software down the road.
All right, perfect. Yeah, Buy American for American purposes. I love it. Any other issues? And what comes to mind really is, it's been in the news a lot how Gen AI models have been using the data that's input into them to train itself. Are there any concerns with that, or does the OMB memo address that at all?
So that's not exactly right, though, right? Because what this memo does is it prohibits vendors from using non-public agency data to train their publicly or commercially available AI models, right? It clearly delineates IP rights through these. It tells agencies that for high-impact AI system, their solicitations must inform the vendors of the transparency and documentation required, right? And there's a 270-day deadline for agencies to update their internal acquisition policies. So they have all of those concerns in mind, and they try and address them here in this memo to make sure any solicitation, any vendor bid, understands that we're expecting this level of transparency, that their policies are going to reflect these requirements to protect IP and to protect non-publicly available information from being scraped in this data.
All right, Ed, Ellie, thanks for sharing the use policy and the buy policy. Are there any instances where we've actually acquired AI?
Yes, we have. So with the new aggressive pro-innovation mandate in place, the General Services Administration wasted no time putting into action. So GSA launched what it calls its One Gov strategy, a government-wide approach to modernizing how agencies buy common goods and services, with AI at the top of the list.
Okay, but we're probably buying like the bottom of the barrel models, right? We're not doing anything with cutting edge frontier models.
Actually, the GSA just announced a partnership with OpenAI. They announced this back in August last month. The deal made ChatGPT Enterprise available for every participating federal agency for a nominal fee of $1 for the year. All right. The GSA acting administrator, Michael Regas, said the goal was critical to demonstrating that the U.S. is the world's AI leader.
And they didn't just stop there. So they did it a week later. They did it again. GSA announced another OneGov deal, this time with Anthropic, to provide its Claude AI model to all three branches of government, executive, legislative, and judiciary. Again, just $1 per agency. Then, shortly after, another deal was announced with Google to provide access to its Gemini platform for just 47 cents per agency for a year.
That must be per user, right?
No, it's per agency.
Whoa.
Yeah. So this is... It's unusual, very unusual. So the government is essentially getting access to the world's most advanced AI platforms for pocket change. So GSA Federal Acquisition Service Commissioner Josh Grunbaum said this was revolutionizing how the government acquires AI, delivering unmatched value and accelerating modernization.
And in the news just this morning, there's an arrangement with Meta's open source Llama models, making them more accessible to the federal agencies. The stated benefit here is different. Because the models are open source, agencies can retain full control over their data, build mission-specific solutions, and reduce reliance on closed proprietary vendors, all at a lower cost to the taxpayer.
Oh, this all sounds way too good to be true. What's the catch?
Any seasoned government contracts attorney knows if a deal looks too good to be true, it probably is. And that's exactly what the protests are arguing, as there now has been three.
Ouch.
Yeah.
All right. So I understand that there's currently bid protests or protests against the Google Award, OpenAI Award, and Anthropic Award. But I'll be honest with you, this isn't my field of expertise. So can you guys talk to me a little bit about what you know about it, what they could be protesting, what this would look like?
Yes. So As Sage has protested the three you just mentioned. Meta, the agreement happened yesterday. So obviously they would need a few days probably to get a protest to go. But I suspect that there might be another protest for that one. But for the other three, the main things that As Sage are protesting are the Competition and Contracting Act. So they're saying that this is a possible circumvention of competition requirements by offering a low first-year pricing without any transparency, that in subsequent years, the arrangement is effectively going to preclude any other major competition, that they're doing like a vendor lock-in almost. That's what the goal is for having these low prices for just 1 year. So the other argument they're having is that this contract is possibly violating FAR Part 11, which requires agencies to specify needs in a manner designed to promote full and open competition. But by limiting these agencies to these specific AI providers' models, the contract fails to meet the government's actual requirement for interoperable, flexible AI solutions that can adapt to evolve technological capabilities and security requirements.
All right, so I get it at this point. They're concerned about the $1 price basically being a non-competitive bid.
Yeah.
They're worried about the way this is structured leading to them being locked into the vendor that they're using, therefore preventing anybody else from coming in afterwards and being able to replace that. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah. So basically their argument is by having these things for a dollar, the agencies are going to use it. They're going to get all their data in there. They're going to get however they're going to use it, the data in the system. They're going to train their workforce on it, build processes around that model. That vendor is then going to be locked in and then they can raise the prices. But we're not going to do anything about it because we're locked in. We don't want to redo all those initial steps because that costs money and time. And we've seen this in the past with vendor lock-in. And so that's what their argument is that they're trying to buy their way in. That $1 deal for the first year without showing what their prices may be in year 2, 3, or 4 is essentially locking them in.
Yeah, I got to tell you, like, that's not a grounds for protest.
No, there's nothing illegal about buy-ins.
Right.
It happens before. A lot of times companies do it for past performance. They try and buy their way in, go low so they can get a good past performance to get subsequent deals, to get subsequent contracts. Yeah, I just don't see this one being, this is a business decision. This isn't a legal decision.
Does the fact that it is nominative $1 different than just going low, right? They're not necessarily cutting into their profit margin to be the lowest as much as providing a sweetheart deal at $1 a year, 47 cents a year. That just seems nominative, right?
So, yes. Yeah. So what the protesters are alleging is that this violates FAR Part 12 on commercial item pricing. And because paying a dollar for a product worth billions is not customary in the commercial marketplace, that violates it. We're supposed to pay what normal customers would pay for something in the marketplace. And so by paying something that clearly, you pay $20, $30 for ChatGPT as a single user, and they're giving it to an entire agency for a dollar, they're saying that's in violation of that we're supposed to pay customary prices. And one of the other things, too, that they're protesting is cybersecurity. They're stating that there's been violations of FAR Part 39, that these vendors have not been authorized under FedRAMP, Cloud Security Program. So, and without the FedRAMP authorization, agencies cannot conduct their proper risk assessments. So I think it's OpenAI or Anthropic have come out and said that they are going through the process to be authorized. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what comes of that. So the protest is supposed to be, we're supposed to get a result by November 24th. So hopefully we'll get some information on this and everything about this protest, about these three.
All right, Ellie. So these sound like decent arguments, at least on their face, right? So what does the government say in response?
So they're saying these aren't new awards, that they've actually just simply modifications to existing contracts with Carahsoft. Carahsoft is the distributor of OpenAI and Anthropic, at least. Basically, if this is just a modification, that Ask Sage actually lacks standing to protest. But the core of the issues still remain. The policy is pushing for speed and innovation, but the protesters argue it's coming at the expense of fair competition, long-term cost savings, and basic security compliance. I'm curious to see what the decision's going to be with GAO, because if we truly can get these models, these AI models, for only $1.47, I think it's really going to change how the federal government views AI and how we use it, because I think it's going to make the access a lot better versus, you know, I feel like sometimes we don't want to pay for something that we're unsure of how to use because we don't know if the cost benefit's going to be there.
Yeah, Ali, I agree. It would be nice to really jump with both feet into the AI pool. But it sounds like we'll just have to wait and see as to how GAO is going to rule. Does that mean, though, while we are in the wait mode, that we got nothing else going on?
No. So the White House came out with the America's AI Action Plan, and it really is the roadmap that they've put out where they want us to achieve and maintain unquestioned and unchallenged global technological dominance in AI. So this plan has three pillars. It's innovation, infrastructure, and international diplomacy. So under the innovation pillar, one of the key goals is to accelerate AI adoption in governments. So part of these GSA deals, they kind of go with that, but there's still more. The plan specifically calls for the creation of an AI procurement toolbox managed by the General Services Administration that would allow for any federal agency to easily choose among multiple models. That sounds exactly like what GSA is trying to do with these OneGov deals with Anthropic, OpenAI, Meta, and Google.
So it just seems like we're hitting that traditional conflict zone of a White House and agency wanting to move fast, but bumping into the bid protest, the procedures, the rules and red tape that it just takes to procure anything in the U.S. government. Are there any things contemplated in this to try and help that move faster?
I mean, the companies, for their part, are defending the agreement. So Google spokesperson said that their offers for a complete AI platform and not just a model, and that their platform has protocols to include non-Google models to help avoid vendor lock-in, which is one of the arguments, and that Anthropic spokesperson said that the goal is to remove cost barriers so federal workers can harness advanced AI to better serve the public, which goes directly towards this AI action plan, which is to get these models into the hands of the federal government. And then OpenAI has stated it's actively pursuing FedRAMP certification. So they're getting past some of these hurdles that, you know, Ask Sage has brought up. So they're really trying to work with the federal government on this. I mean, this is a central conflict for every federal attorney listening.
Yeah.
So we have a clear policy that mandates from the White House and the OMB to innovate, to move fast, to cut red tape, to adopt AI. But you also have that legal and ethical duty to uphold the principles of the Competition Act and the Federal Acquisition Regulation, which are designed to ensure fairness, transparency, and responsible use of taxpayer money. What happens when that top-down pressure to innovate clashes with foundational rules of procurement? I mean, that's the question at protests.
Right. So we're trying to change a system that's been in place for a while. We're moving aggressively, trying to move fast. But it's not going to be a simple process. Now, for those of us not involved in that bid protest, for those of us not involved in that high-level legal procedure, why don't we give Jason Floyd a little quiz to make sure he was paying attention through this whole conversation? You, as a legal advisor, what are some of the things that you're going to have to be looking at based on the memoranda that were issued earlier in April and advising your clients on the proper use of AI?
All right, so Ed, it sounds like someone will be advising the Chow on what constitutes high-impact AI as defined in these policy memos, and then help your folks build the new risk management and appeals process required by the memos. So as acquisition counsel, you'll be asked to navigate this new landscape, figure out how to run a fair competition when a competitor has a government-wide price of something like a dollar, right? All right, so going back to the protest, though, when do you think we'll get a decision?
It's November 24th is when GAO has to decide on these protests. That decision could either validate GSA's aggressive, fast-moving approach, or it could send a message that, nope, we have to go back to the fundamentals. We have to go back to the federal acquisition regulations. Either way, the outcome will have enormous consequences for the future of technology in the federal government. So it's going to be interesting to track and see what happens over the next few months with that.
All right. It's a dense topic. And AI technology, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be something that we're going to talk a lot about on these podcasts as we go forward. So we appreciate everybody for paying attention. We appreciate Jason coming in from the hallway. And
thanks for having me, Ed.
Being the subject of our interrogation. But pay attention. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Pay attention for our webinars and trainings. And we at the Schoolhouse are always here to help.
So that's all the time we have for today on Far and Beyond. We'll be tracking the GAO's decision, and we'll be back with a full analysis when it drops, I am sure. So until then, thank you for joining us as we explore the ever-evolving world of federal law and policy. Be sure to subscribe to Far and Beyond on your favorite podcast platform and connect with us on Facebook and LinkedIn. The links are in the show notes. As always, the views expressed here are those of the presenters and do not represent the Judge Advocate General Corps, the Department of the Army, the Department of the Air Force, or the Department of Defense.